This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
There was hope the appointment of a new regional mediator for Burundi, former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa, will jumpstart the peace process. But talks that were scheduled to start Monday in Arusha have been delayed until later this month.
That's Mohamed Yusuf reporting from Nairobi. Details next.
Also, rescue workers in Nairobi, Kenya continue to search for survivors from a building collapse on Saturday, while the death toll has risen to 16. A three-day anti-poaching summit has concluded in Kenya, and migrants continue their dangerous journeys to reach Europe.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, there was hope that the appointment of a new regional mediator for Burundi, former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa, would jumpstart the peace process. However, that has not happened. Talks that were scheduled to start in Arusha have been delayed until later this month. In the meantime, arrests, grenade attacks, and assassinations continue. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Political mediation for Burundi, scheduled to start Monday, has been postponed. Officials cited the need to consult more with the government and its opponents. A previous mediation effort led by Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni failed to make progress. In March, this African community bloc appointed former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa to lead the talks and help find a solution to the country's year-long political crisis. According to officials familiar with the talks, the government is reluctant to meet with opposition groups, who they say are behind attacks on government and security officials. Government spokesman Willy Nyamitwe says the talks should expand to include opposition groups in exile.
Political talks are going on in the country because we have a commission that is dealing with inter-Burundian dialogue, but we are willing to continue this dialogue from inside to outside. So we have to go outside to meet other Burundians who cannot make their trip to Burundi.
The opposition group Sinared, whose members are mostly in exile, have accused the government of blocking them from taking part in the political dialogue. Amnesty International Deputy Regional Director Sarah Jackson says the delays affect the country's stability.
We've seen the talks delayed time and time again. And as they're delayed, it's ordinary Burundians who are suffering from the economic situation, from increasing polarization, and then from these high-profile assassinations.
Jackson says violence and human rights abuses are on the rise.
The last year has been marked by killings, torture, arbitrary arrests, and what we've seen in the last couple of weeks is an increase in targeted assassinations or attacks on high-level people from all sides.
Last week, gunmen killed a top brigadier general along with his wife and bodyguard, an act condemned by President Pierre Nkurunziza. The head of the Korenabu political movement, Diodine Birahinduka, says Burundi needs a change in leadership.
We don't believe that these people are the best people to lead the country. They don't have clean hands. Some of them have got blood under their hands. We believe that the country should be in the hands of a new generation of politicians with the help of international community.
The crisis began last year when President Nkurunziza announced he will seek a third term, a move his critics said was unconstitutional. Nkurunziza won re-election in July, but only after a coup attempt and violent protests. The United Nations says more than 400 people have been killed and more than 250,000 have fled the country since the crisis began. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Rescue workers in Nairobi continue to search for survivors while the death toll from a building collapse Saturday has risen to 16. The building reportedly had been built on a foundation of sandbags and closed for occupancy 2 years ago. Nevertheless, dozens of families were living inside. Reporter Lenny Rovaga has more on the story.
Search and rescue efforts were well into the second day in Huruma, a residential estate on the outskirts of Nairobi. A heavy downpour last Friday led to the collapse of the six-story building that housed more than 150 families. According to government officials, the building had 198 single rooms. There are 21 reported fatalities, while the Kenya Red Cross has rescued 135 people who are being treated and discharged at various city hospitals. Speaking to VOA, Kenya Red Cross spokesperson Anthony Mwangi was hopeful that although the window in which more victims could be rescued is slowly closing, there is still a chance of finding more survivors.
It's a race against time. If there is any survivor in there, their chances are slowly dimming, and search and rescue operations are doing all that they can. So we are still hopeful that there could be some survivors. We haven't yet called it off to a recovery position. We are still hoping that we could at least save at least one more person from there beneath the debris.
The Kenyan police issued a manhunt for the owner of the ill-fated building. He later turned himself in to the authorities. 2 years ago, the National Construction Authority earmarked the building for demolition. The authority is the country's regulatory body that approves all construction and oversees quality checks, among other regulations. According to authorities, the building did not have an occupancy permit and was on riparian land, meaning a river passes through the land on which the residential unit was built. An audit on buildings ordered a year ago by President Uhuru Kenyatta revealed that 58% of the buildings in the capital were unfit to live in. At a Monday news conference, Architects and Quantity Surveyors Board Chairman Nathan Kureba said the main reason the building collapsed was its construction on a riverbank.
Collapse of buildings is caused by a myriad of challenges. One, it could be the developer who took shortcuts. Two, it could be the developer used unqualified personnel. Three, it could be that supervision was not done. And four, it could be that proper tests were not done. There are shortcuts to this, and this is causing us a lot of problems. At the present site, you realize that this is near riparian where we live.
According to the Kenya Red Cross, 96 people are reported missing and are believed to be trapped under the rubble. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
A three-day anti-poaching summit attended and supported by three African presidents has concluded in Kenya. It resulted in $5 million in pledges and a united message to the world that elephants are worth more alive than dead. VOA's Jill Craig attended the summit that culminated with the largest ivory burn in history.
Elephants are iconic symbols of Africa, but the poaching crisis across the continent puts their existence in jeopardy. Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta says their deaths represent a blow to his country's heritage. Kenyatta and the presidents of Uganda and Gabon came together at the Giants Club Summit in Kenya to pledge their support to saving the African elephant, of which tens of thousands are killed every year for their ivory tusks. Save the Elephant's founder, Ian Douglas Hamilton, says this high-level commitment is key.
Ultimately, a lot of decisions in Africa get taken at presidential level. If the president is not behind a movement, it's just not going to happen.
The three-day summit, organized by elephant conservation group Space for Giants, also hosted conservationists, diplomats, celebrities, and others to find solutions to the poaching crisis. Donors and financiers pledged more than $5 million for elephant protection initiatives in Kenya, Gabon, Uganda, and Botswana. Funds will go toward increasing frontline protection, improving technological and legal capabilities, building electrified fences, and setting up an endowment fund for protected areas. John Abor is a legal specialist and trainer for Space for Giants.
I believe that this is going to send a message to the rest of Africa, especially the places where wildlife are, they are going to see what the president of Gabon, the president of Kenya, the president of Uganda have done.
Others, like wildlife investigator Rod Potter, are hopeful but hesitant about the summit's outcomes.
Yes, I do think something will come out of it. Whether it's as big as we would like to see, probably not.
At Kenya's ivory burn Saturday, in which 105 tons of elephant ivory and 1 1/3 tons of rhino horn were destroyed, Kenyatta pledged his support for a complete ban on the ivory trade. WildAid CEO Peter Knights explains why he and many other conservationists are against the selling of ivory.
We've tried this two times. In the 1980s, we were trying to sell ivory legally under a regulated trade. We lost half of Africa's elephants. It went from 1.3 million to 600,000 elephants. We stopped the trade in 1989, and the poaching went down. And then again, we tried again in 2009. They sold 70 tons to China, and suddenly the poaching went up again to 33,000. So you can't put this back on the market, just like you can't put heroin back on the market.
The summit and the ivory burn concluded with this unified message to the world. Ivory has no worth, while living elephants have enormous value. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 16 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Talks that were scheduled to start today in Arusha to jumpstart the peace process in Burundi have been delayed until later this month. Rescue workers in Nairobi, Kenya continue to search for survivors in the rubble, while the death toll from a building collapse Saturday has risen to 16. And attended and supported by three African presidents, a three-day anti-poaching summit has concluded in Kenya. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
The International Organization for Migration, IOM, reports that over 27,000 migrants who crossed the treacherous waters of the Mediterranean Sea have been registered in Italy as of this morning. In addition, more deaths have occurred after two more sea wrecks. Flavio Di Giacomo is a spokesperson for IOM in Rome. He spoke with me about the present migration situation in Italy and Greece, the latest sea rescues, and what may lie ahead.
The situation is changing because after the EU-Turkey deal, the arrivals in Greece are currently slowing down. We are talking about 20-80 arrivals per day. And we were used to see 23,000 arrivals per day. So the route from Turkey to Greece is actually closed, let's say that. While in Italy we have seen an increase of 2,000 arrivals compared to last year, so more or less we are in line with the same figures registered last year, the same period. And for the moment, we didn't register any evidence of an effect of the closure of the Balkan route to Italy, since the arrivals from Libya to Italy and from Egypt to Italy are currently composed by migrants coming from sub-Saharan Africa or Horn of Africa. There is a small increase of arrivals from Egypt, 2,000 people this year compared to 200 people last year. But let's say that the overall majority of migrants are arriving from Libya and are fleeing from violence in Libya.
So many people still are continuing to take the risk. How many rescues have taken place just recently?
Well, all the migrants arriving in Italy are rescued at Fiume Channel, Sicily, because they are forced to live on these unwealthy vessels and rubber dinghies, so they need to be rescued, otherwise they would drown, all of them. So they have problems with their engines and with their boats after a few hours of navigation. We have a registered arrival of about 450 people last Friday, and unfortunately we registered two shipwrecks. Particularly one shipwreck was quite dramatic because a rubber dinghy with 110 people on board started to take water just after a few hours after the departure, and 84 people drowned. They fell into the water, and the 26 people were still alive, were rescued by a commercial ship, then saved them, and they met the Coast Guard ships who brought all the survivors to Lampedusa. Now the 26 survivors are in Lampedusa. They are provided with psychological support. About 84 people who have died, according to the testimonies we gathered directly in Lampedusa from the survivors. And we also had the news of another tragedy, because another boat was rescued at sea, and on this boat, survivors told us that 9 people fell into the water. We have registered so far over 1,200 deaths, considering that there was a huge shipwreck a couple of weeks ago.
With the summer months approaching, I'm sure you all are anticipating more of what you're seeing now.
We expect an increase of arrivals with good weather conditions, of course, like every year. We think that more or less the arrivals to Italy for the moment should be in line with the arrivals of last year. Of course, we don't know what will happen after the closure of the Balkan route, because we know if a route is closed, usually another route, which is longer and more dangerous for the migrants, usually opens up. And for the moment, we do not have any evidence, but we expect something to happen. And it's quite difficult to predict what will happen in Italy, because it's also linked to the Libyan situation, which is very chaotic and unpredictable. We know that the smugglers for the moment are actually working quite without any problems in Libya. We don't know if they will be able to do that in the next few months. We will see. But for the moment, the situation is quite dramatic, because they are still organizing these journeys for migrants. And many migrants who are arriving in Italy are people who have been living in Libya for quite a while, for months, even years, who didn't have the intention to come to Europe, many of them at least. Especially sub-Saharan migrants are target of violence in the country, and they have problems, and they think that coming back is too dangerous for them. They decide to try to seek crossing in order to come to Europe. This is very important, because many of the migrants are arriving, if we're not talking about people fleeing from regimes, persecutions, or wars, but we're talking people coming from sub-Saharan Africa and Western Africa, they don't have the intention to come to Europe when they flee from their country. They leave from their country for many reasons. Nigerians, we know that they can come because of Boko Haram, or in Malian as well, because there are regions where there are conflicts. Or people who are coming from economic reasons, they try to find a job in Libya. They don't have the intention to come to Europe often, but they change their mind once in Libya, so they decide to continue because of the conditions of the country, which is actually very dangerous for them.
That was Flavio Di Giacomo, a spokesperson for IOM. He spoke with me from Rome.
In related news, Paris police have evacuated more than 1,000 migrants from a makeshift camp near an elevated train station. The French news agency says it's the third time the camp has been cleared in the last 3 months. The camp is located in Stalingrad station in the north of Paris. The migrants boarded buses to be taken to relocation centers. Few problems were reported. Prior to the evacuation last night, about 500 migrants were in the camp, but this morning there were more than 1,300. Elsewhere in Europe, the Associated Press reports Germany is calling for an extension of migrant controls at the Austrian border. The controls went into effect last year when thousands of migrants and refugees entered Germany every day. In all, more than 1 million entered Germany last year.
Also, Yehias, while many thousands of migrants and refugees are trying or hoping to make their way to Europe, very few are choosing Portugal as a destination. That's even though the government in Lisbon says it would welcome more than 10,000. Portugal is undergoing tough economic times. VOA's David Arnold talked to reporter Antonio Martin Neto in Lisbon. He says Portugal seemingly had developed a good migrant policy in theory.
On the ground, this policy doesn't work very well. Since the refugee crisis started in 2015, Portugal received less than 200 refugees. And some specialists said that this happens because there is a lack of notoriety of Portugal in some countries where the people face war or poverty, like Syria or Iraq and Afghanistan. They don't know Portugal. They don't know the opportunities they can find here. And at the same time, Portugal is located in the west coast of Europe, and it's not a major player in international politics and economy.
Apparently, the government wants to have migrants coming into the country. What is the government doing about it now?
Portugal received a quota to have placed the refugees from the European Union. And the socialist government that started in October last year announced that 10,500 people could be received here.
What kind of jobs are being offered?
They have some jobs in countryside, and they need some people and young people to work in agriculture. But they also need doctors, for instance. They need nurses. They need also professionals in the health sector. The main problem now is to teach these people Portuguese.
That was reporter Antonio Martin Neto from Lisbon. He spoke to VOA's David Arnold.
Dozens of journalists began a sit-in at Egypt's Interior Ministry today to protest last night's police raid on their office and the arrest of two activists. Cairo police and the military initially barred entry to the neighborhood surrounding the ministry. However, the barricades have been lifted. The AP says hundreds of uniformed and undercover police were deployed across central Cairo today to prevent more protests. Two journalists who were arrested work for the anti-government website, January Gate.
The first commercial test for the Zika virus could be on the market this week. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved the blood test last Thursday. It was developed by Quest Diagnostics and will be used to find genetic material from the Zika virus, known as RNA. It's a substance found in all living cells and carries instructions for synthesizing proteins. Zika is spread by mosquitoes and has reached epidemic levels in parts of Latin America and the Caribbean. The Associated Press says health officials expect small outbreaks soon in the U.S. as the weather gets warm and mosquito populations increase. Some 426 Zika cases have been reported in the U.S., but all have been linked to travel outside of the country. The first Zika-related death was reported in the U.S. on Friday. U.S. officials say such deaths among adults are rare. The Zika virus is associated with birth defects and some neurological disorders.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Keith Holmes, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next on Let's Talk. Flight attendants. Can one be too old to do the job? Join host Sandy Shomari and his guests discussing flight attendants' age and duties. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
voaafrica.com.
On voaafrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
voaafrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.